from KQED. Hey there, and welcome to the California Report podcast. I'm Penny Nelson.
And I'm Monica Samayoa. We start in Oakland as teachers and staff from the Oakland Unified School District hit the picket line for the second day. They're drawing hope and tough lessons from what they witnessed down south last month. The California Report's Lily Jamali explains.
January's strike in Los Angeles offers a roadmap for the thousands of Oakland teachers who've walked out. Vanessa Robbie teaches bilingual kindergarten at Manzanita Seed Elementary in Oakland.
I think that people are really inspired seeing how many of the teachers' demands were met and seeing that the strike was relatively short. It was only 6 days long.
They won. So that's what we want too.
Third grade teacher Corey Wallace is referring to the contract teachers in Los Angeles got, but he acknowledges the unsolved problem that comes with winning more pay and smaller class sizes. Who's going to pay for it?
We deserve more, but the money's not there. So yes, the state government definitely needs to do something.
The experience of teachers in L.A. holds this harsh lesson, one highlighted in a recent Fact Finders report, which called the state's system for funding education complicated and flawed in a number of ways. Bottom line, in L.A., the district made promises it can't pay for. As the union and district in Oakland face off again this morning, that reality looms large, even if teachers here get what they want on paper. For the California Report, I'm Lily Jamali in Oakland.
Speaking of chaotic gatherings, Penny, isn't the California Republican Party meeting this weekend?
You betcha. It will be the California Republican Convention taking place in Sacramento this weekend. And, you know, the California Republicans are not known as a particularly strong entity. They were decimated in November 2018 elections, and that was just the latest in a string of hits to the state GOP. At the convention this weekend, the party is slated to select its new chair, but as KQED's politics reporter Katie Orr is going to tell us, it's debatable whether the new chair or anyone else is going to be able to turn things around.
Whoever is elected chair of the California Republican Party, he or she will have their work cut out for them. The GOP lost half of its congressional delegation in the November election, including all of Orange County. Democrats also hold 75% of seats in the state legislature. To Assemblymember Chad Mays, the message is clear.
I think we've been doubling down on stupid now for 20 years as California Republicans.
Mays has been criticized by Republican hardliners for being too moderate. But he says the GOP's tendency to turn on members who don't agree with 100% of its policies will kill the party.
Which is crazy to me that they think a winning strategy is to subtract, is to be divisive, even within the party.
But then there are those who think the party needs to provide a strong contrast to the Democrats. Former Assemblymember Travis Allen, who is running for party chair, says the GOP hasn't been successful backing what he calls Republican-light candidates for offices like governor.
This sort of losing backward strategy has led to candidates like Meg Whitman and Neil Kashkari, who are very, you know, middle-of-the-road moderate Republicans and got absolutely destroyed in their races.
Allen ran an unsuccessful campaign for governor last year. He'll face at least two challengers in the race to be party chair. For the California Report, I'm Katie Orr in Sacramento.
Staying with Republican politics and policies, a federal judge in San Diego may order the government to identify and possibly reunite what could be thousands more families separated at the border under the Trump administration's zero-tolerance policy. KQED's Julie Small was at Thursday's hearing.
When U.S. District Judge Dana Sabraw ordered the government to reunite roughly 2,700 migrant children with their parents last June, he thought he had remedied a wrong. But just as the task was nearly complete, a government watchdog reported that thousands more children may have been separated from their families. Speaking after the hearing in Sabraw's courtroom, ACLU attorney Lee Gallant said the government should identify and help locate all the families.
At the end of the day, it's about each individual kid, and if there's one kid out there looking for their parent, we need to find them.
A U.S. attorney told Sabraw that identifying and reuniting additional children would be costly and time-consuming, to which the judge responded, isn't it important to the process to have an accounting of what happened, to whom, how many were involved, and where are they? Sabra said he would issue a decision very soon on what to do about the additional family separations. For the California Report, I'm Julie Small in San Diego.
Now, Monica, down in San Bernardino County, it looks like there's going to be a payment of about $1 million to the LGBT inmates incarcerated there. What's going on?
So lesbian, gay, bisexual, trans inmates were being kept away from the general population and locked up for 23 hours a day. They were denied access to programs like job training and drug rehabilitation at a Rancho Cucamonga jail. KBCR's Benjamin Perper has more.
The payment comes 6 months after San Bernardino County Sheriff John McMahon and the ACLU of Southern California settled a lawsuit alleging that gay, bisexual, transgender, and intersex inmates were confined for 23 hours a day and denied access to inmate programs such as job training and drug rehabilitation. About 600 people were housed in what deputies called the Alternative Lifestyle Tank over a period of time ranging from 2012 to 2018. Amanda Goad is the director of the LGBTQ Gender and Reproductive Justice Project with ACLU SoCal. She says the payment is a big victory for the ACLU's efforts to improve living conditions for these inmates in Southern California jails.
We are hopeful that this is going to be a big deal, not only in terms of making people's experiences better in San Bernardino going forward, but that these policies can serve as a model for other jurisdictions in Southern California and beyond as they figure out how best to treat their LGBTI populations.
According to the settlement, the Sheriff's Department will offer LGBTI inmates the choice to be incarcerated with the general population or in the newly named gay, bisexual, transgender, and intersex unit. A social worker will be hired to assess the needs of this population. There will be mandatory recreation as well as access to job training and drug rehab programs. Sheriff's officials declined to comment for this story. For the California Report, I'm Benjamin Perper in San Bernardino.
Let's head back up north to check in on post-wildfire news, where architecture students from Cal Poly and San Luis Obispo are working to reimagine paradise. They're creating plans to rebuild the town, mostly destroyed by November's campfire, with input from residents. KCBX's Tyler Pratt talked with the students presenting their concepts to the Paradise community at Chico State on Friday.
Cal Poly students went to Butte County earlier this year to find out what former residents loved about Paradise. That's what led Ben Campbell to design an open-air recreation center for youth.
They really enjoyed their outdoors and the sense that they were tied into their natural surroundings, and quite different than a lot of normal high schools you talk to. They really like doing outdoors activities.
Campbell and the other students spend over 40 hours a week in this studio on campus. Their desks are littered with snacks, blueprints, tea. Architecture student Pacific Austin has orange peels all over her desk.
I'm designing a multi-use building. It's going to be half a rock climbing and bouldering gym and half fire station.
The idea of congregation is present in many of the designs. Since the elderly died in disproportionate numbers in the campfire, students have created multi-generational living arrangements so seniors wouldn't be isolated. They've made larger roads for easier evacuation should fire ever strike again, and they're incorporating flame-resistant materials into courthouses and theaters. Stacy White teaches the students in this studio at Cal Poly. She says a major theme of her class is designing with empathy.
We talk about paradise and we equate it with the campfire, and that place is beautiful, and helping them to have that town back is really what we're focused on.
At the community forum in Chico today, students will hear what residents like and don't like about their projects. Then they'll adjust their designs and return in April for more feedback. For the California Report, I'm Tyler Pratt in San Luis Obispo.
And finally, on this Friday, it's time for a little bit of dog news.
Yay.
We read on the website, The LAist, that King, a fox terrier, won the recent Westminster Kennel Club Dog Show at Madison Square Garden. Anyone who knows the Christopher Guest movie Best in Show will know exactly what we're talking about.
Cookie and I work as a team. We met at this dance.
He didn't want to dance.
I got two left feet.
I thought he was kidding.
But I wasn't. I was born with two left feet.
Beatrice has been showing signs of depression.
Ever since she saw us having sex.
What would you like to say to Beatrice right now?
The well-groomed brown and white dog that took home the crown, though, is not a New Yorker, not an East Coaster. King is a Californian living in Rialto, our very own Inland Empire. What do you think of that, Miss Monica?
I really wish I could attend one of these shows, but it's more so I could just pet all the dogs and not, I mean, yes, of course, I want to see them compete, but I just, I'm like, oh my God, a room full of dogs.
That is so not going to happen. And once you see Best in Show...
Oh, no, trust me. So Netflix has a show called 7 Days Out. And I mean, I was bored one night. My mom was home and we're like, well, let's watch some TV. And so we stumbled upon the show. And I'm like, OK, the first one, Westminster. And I was like, OK, what is this? Like, I've heard of this, but I've never understood.
And that's the one that's in this story.
All the preparation that goes into this show is insane. They treat their dogs a lot better than... Maybe they even treat some of their humans like, oh, my goodness. One of them had their own treadmill. So instead of going on walks, they just like, oh, let's just put them on the treadmill.
Fitness and, first.
They follow a few people. And one of them, it was, from what I remember, this guy just randomly, you know, picked up a puppy. I forgot the breed. And someone's like, oh, it's a really great looking dog. You should put him in shows. And, you know, the idea went into this guy's head. He's like, yeah, let me do it. And he started winning shows. And he did it. He won Best in Breed, but he didn't win Best in Show. He was disappointed. He's like, well, we know we brought everything we could just to make it here. But even just being in this environment is so great. And
Monica, it's all about the blue ribbon.
Exactly. That's all they talked about. The blue ribbon. That's all that matters. Like, they didn't care if they didn't win anything else. It's all about that blue ribbon.
Oh, lordy, lordy, lordy. All righty. Well, that, our friends, is the California Report podcast for this Friday, which is February 22nd. And this is a KQED production. I'm Penny Nelson.
I'm Monica Samayoa.
And we hope you have a great weekend.
See ya.
Support for the California Report comes from the California Healthcare Foundation, featuring Listening to Mothers in California, a new survey that reveals what is and isn't working with maternity care in the Golden State, on the web at chcf.org. And Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose Fund for Strategic Innovation supports transformative ideas that benefit humanity while protecting the natural world, recognizing through science the interdependence of all living systems.